What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Evolve You podcast. I am your host, Dr. Brian McElderry, holistic life coach, business mentor, speaker, and author. And on this podcast, we deliver you exciting episodes discussing health, business, and personal development to evolve you into the best version of yourself. Not only from my own personal experiences, but other influential guests we decide to bring onto this platform to share their area of expertise. That being said, as I always say for my guest episodes, you guys are probably tired of hearing it, but you're tired of hearing from me. So I always bring on exciting guests to give a different perspective. And I think we've been on a roll here from my guests that have really been sharing empowering stories about their struggles, their wins, things that they've overcome, and things that they're celebrating in their own personal and professional lives. And that being said, I love to just converse. And it seems like my podcast guests, it always is just a natural conversation. And that's what I love about having guests on my podcast here is just we're just having a conversation. And hopefully you guys feel as if you're a family and your community here. And that being said, I always recommend that you go ahead and leave us a rating review down below in iTunes and Apple. Let us know what you think. If you're listening to a specific episode, if you're coming on for the first time and you're supporting a guest here, reach out to them, tell them that you listened to the episode. And that being said, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. And I think this topic of discussion is really in people's minds. And I'm going to go ahead and say real estate, real estate, real estate. And I've got my brother Jansen on the line today. Jansen, what's going on? Jansen, please pronounce your last name for me. I hate butchering people's last names.
It's the worst. It's Kleffiker.
Kleffiker.
I almost took my wife's last name. Considered it. And I didn't, sadly. No, I'm just joking. It's Kleffiker, Jansen Kleffiker.
Love it.
What's up, man? How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you coming on, man. So I want the people, as always, to kind of get understanding of my guest story. You know, you can start where you'd like, where you're from, and then we could dive in a little bit more and transition as I usually do with, you know, your area of expertise, which is real estate, more so from the entrepreneurial standpoint and really taking hold of your own personal goals and igniting a team around you to hit those goals. So that being said, can you give us an insight into who Jansen is a little bit?
Yeah, man, I'm a simple guy. I got into real estate 3 years ago. I grew up in the Virginia Beach, Hampton Roads area on the East Coast. And in the middle of my high school experience, we had the 08 recession hit with the housing crisis. And a lot of money out on the East Coast is due to real estate. So a lot of money was lost. And I ended up finding my way to Dallas. And I realized I went from being like, who has money to, oh my gosh, everybody has money. And found myself in a market that is exploding because of real estate. And it's something that was always on the top of my mind from the age of 18. I went to school, focused on marketing, then pursued the Cours de Sommelier. So I pursued being a service-minded wine professional and studying wine full-time for about 2 years.
So you went the Gary Vee wine route.
Yeah, not quite. Not quite. He got successful from it. I did not. I ended up meeting my wife and to be a sommelier, you're working nights and weekends pretty much indefinitely. And I realized that was not the path for me. And so I started to double dip. I stayed in the wine industry for about a year and a half, 18 months. And while getting my license and getting my start in real estate. And then I got out of the industry and had to get back in order to pay bills. And so it's been a journey, and I'm honestly lucky. If you're in the DFW area and you're not tapped into a sales industry and wanting to, I would say real estate's a great one to get started in. But we're incredibly saturated, inundated with agents. Everybody knows an agent. And so there's a lot of competition, which fuels me. I don't know if it would fuel you, but it excites me to be up against somebody and to win a deal.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. So I like to take it back just a little bit, and I love that you kind of expedited that story, but I like to deep dive because really the root of a person is where they're from, you know, how they were raised and how they even got intrigued into that. So you made a transition from you know, high school to college. Where'd you go to college, by the way?
UNT, University UNT. Of North Texas.
Gotcha.
And quick disclaimer, I'm not going to act like I graduated. I'm a fifth-year sophomore. If I were to go back, I tried college. So
It did not work for me, though. Hey, you know, these days now, it's even questionable around college these days.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing for me is understanding, you know, how a person got into, because I consider you kind of within your purpose. Like, you truly enjoy what you do, and really from the service of people and making people happy, and their joy comes from, you know, buying their first home or investing in their first home or selling their home and getting to move where they want to move and taking care of their family. So kind of where did that spark come from when you were in Virginia Beach and you transitioned down to Dallas? Was there like a mentor that you had or like an epiphany moment or something where it just sparked that for you?
Man, I can honestly say being in the hospitality industry really fueled that for me. I got to work at a steakhouse here in Dallas and working for the management team there. It's Papa's Bro Steakhouse. The management team there is some of the best in the industry.
Yeah.
And they really fueled every single interaction with somebody. At the core of it is treating that person like family and getting to work in an industry where every single day you're interacting with new people and creating those relationships from ground zero. And within 2.5-3 hours of them sitting at your table, you're creating a friendship there.
Yeah.
Has really, that really was a good baseline for me. On top of that, doing everything with excellence, being passionate about things of luxury and high-end things and things that aren't an everyday purchase. Excited me and walking people through. When you're selling a $15,000 bottle of wine to customers, you handle it with a different level of care than if it's $7 from the gas station.
Exactly.
And then learning the difference between those things and handling even a $7 bottle of wine with care if it's somebody's pinnacle to them of what top of the line means. So that really laid a baseline for me of learning like how to interact with people well. And how, at the root of it all, if you don't have people, if you don't have butts in seats, you don't have money. And it's not about the money, but realizing that at the core of everything I do, it's people on the other side of it, and being able to let that be one of the main currents to what fuels me every single day.
And
Wow.
So that just blew my mind. Obviously. The wine thing, I love, guys, if you don't know, I'm full disclosure here. A lot of times I do not prep for these, and my guests know it, that I like being excited and intrigued and have this curiosity. And I'm so curious as to this wine. Like, we don't, this is not what this is about, but at the same token, I love kind of having a good conversation to excite people that are listening too. What is, if you were to pick one bottle of wine that somebody were to, you know, drink at some point in life, like what would that be that they're like, hey, before you leave this earth, you need to have this experience?
Oh,
that
man.
That could be a very broad question. And let's get it down to a red wine.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very broad strokes. There's not a bottle that I've had that like, I would be like, you have to have this bottle from this producer.
Yeah.
I think I would say put two wines side by side and drink these two wines side by side so you could really know the difference and how broad wine can be and why people are so intrigued by it. And like, I would say drinking something from an Hermitage from France. That has a lot of dirt and grit to it, a lot of Brett to it. So it tastes and smells like barnyard. And putting that up against your traditional Napa cab and just going, holy cow, wines can taste so different. And it just kind of, it makes you sit back and go, okay, I want to dissect this. I want to take a small swig and go, okay, what's the flavor profile? What's the nose on it? Instead of just like, hey, this tastes good.
Exactly.
You know, and like diving into it, that got me so passionate. The first time I had a wine that was older than 10 years old and realizing how different that was from, this would have been 2013. So drinking like a 2002 and comparing that to a 2013 and being like, oh my gosh, this is so unique and these can be so different. And realizing the world of wine is so broad and people pour their heart and souls into the bottle. Another thing that intrigued me about wine too, while we're on the topic, I was fascinated by the idea of drinking history. Ooh. Like I was sitting across from a rep from a cognac called Louis Trey, Louis the 13th, and it's high dollar stuff, but really well marketed, and you'd see it on any high end bar. And he goes, "Look, you're going to drink this, and the man who poured his life into this glass that you're drinking right now will never get to experience it for himself. By the time they release it, the guy's dead," which is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So like the history, the realization that somebody can put so much into something and not reap the fruit of it, fascinated me. And it really instilled in me like the idea of legacy too. Ooh, wow. And how great, like match. I can reap the fruit of my labor. And my wife and I can have a really nice dinner one night. But at the end of the day, what I want is my kids to have a really nice dinner one night and get to drink that $15,000 bottle of wine. But yeah, man, I would say drink two things side by side that are completely different and try to dissect why they're different. And that would give you a lot of intrigue into the world of wine.
I like that. I love the connection you made between that legacy and now you're seeing the deep dive as to the transition maybe of the curiosity of real estate. Now that you're seeing, wow, what I've learned from my, you know, wins and maybe struggles of, you know, the wine industry and the things that I had to do that I didn't necessarily want to do, but I found some learning lesson out of that. And you've translated it obviously into what you're doing now. Can you give us maybe one struggle point? Because I love highlighting that too, that people see my guests, they hear my guests, they see me, they see other people that are so-called, they look like they're doing well, they look like they're successful, and maybe, you know, most people are, you know, we're not doing bad. But there's a point where people maybe don't see the dark side, the side where, you know, there was doubt and fear and uncertainty and those times. Can you highlight a point maybe in your life that you questioned? And obviously, you know, we're believers, and Jansen and I go to the same church. That's where we actually met, serving.
Yeah.
And faith was maybe withered a little bit. You were wondering kind of, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? As maybe we can transition into the real estate industry now, because real estate is not easy when you jump into it, man. It's like, you can get the deals, you can close big deals and you'll be set. That's not how it goes.
Yeah. No, it's not, man. And I could probably answer for you more than just one instance.
Yeah.
It seems like there, especially in the first 2-3 years, there was one every month where I was like, okay, this might kick me out. This might put me on my tail. And for some reason, for anybody getting into an industry that they're passionate about, that they know that they can make it, it's just a time game. Stick to it. Yeah. I, for some reason, had no desire to get out. I was like, it's all or nothing. Until I'm bankrupt or until I cannot do it, I'm going to continue to do it. So there was a level of grit there. And there's a level of faking it till you make it and just being honest with yourself, that like, I don't have it all figured out and I'm just going to keep working at it. But man, there was a number of them. So I got out of the restaurant industry. I closed my first deal, got my first commission check. And I was like, I can afford to just do real estate full time. And it was the most exhilarating and daunting thing I'd ever done. I had a pit in my stomach the very first day. I knew
you remember your first deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I sold my sister and brother-in-law's house for 1%. Wow. I discounted it. I made a third of what I should have. I was going to make a third of what I should have. And then we sold it for, over asking it. So they were like, oh, well, you made more money for us than we would have. So here's the other 2%, which was nice of them. That's very good. Generous of them. Yeah, that was my first deal, man. And I put everything into it and was really passionate about it. Looking back on it, they went on a limb with me. I knew I'm actually in the process of selling one of their other houses. And
yeah,
the level of knowledge I had then compared to the level of knowledge I have now is completely different.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different ballgame. So there's going to be a level of going out on a limb that your first clients are going to have to do. And some of them won't be aware of it. I had other clients who were like, how long have you been doing real estate? How many deals have you done? And I was like, well, my team has done da, 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 da.
Yeah.
They didn't have no idea. They were my second deal. But man, diving into it, I would say a month after I quit my restaurant job, I got lunch with a buddy of mine. And we're still friends to this day. I will clarify that. But we sat down and my friend basically said, man, I wouldn't hire you. You don't know what you're doing yet. Like, I would probably wouldn't hire you for the next 2 years. And in my brain, I'm like, that's not how this works. I'm your friend. You hire me. This is, you know what I mean? But it basically showed me nobody owes me anything because they know me. I have to prove to every single person that I sit across from the table from that I'm trying to get hired for on a deal. I've got to prove it to them. And I had a conversation with a buddy of mine shortly after that. And he was like, there were times early in my business where I was overpromising and I was just going to have to figure out how to do it. So doing that, man, I that was probably the first one. After I got out of the restaurant industry, I had to quickly go back. After a few months, I had a car repossessed.
Yeah.
That's not something I've shared with a whole lot of people until as of late because it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah.
But being young, being married, coming home and being like, hey, babe, our car just got taken because we didn't pay the bill was a scary thing.
Yeah.
But to me, it was like, I'm gonna tread water until I get that life jacket, and that life jacket's gonna come as long as I'm continuing to work. And a lot of people would be like, now I'm just gonna revert to what I know and go back to waiting tables. But I found very quickly that like mentorship was vital, who I surrounded myself was vital, who I warranted giving input into my life was vital, because I could have walked away from that lunch with my buddy and been like, okay, I'm out, nobody's gonna believe me, nobody's gonna trust me. Wow, or just go, okay, now I have to prove it to everybody. I'm going to prove it to this guy that I have what it takes. And, and I've had many conversations since then and we're good.
Yeah.
but yeah, man, that was really important. I, what fueled me probably was exposure. Super important. I realized that like what I'm exposed to is super important. Both my parents are teachers. We didn't grow up with money. I'm the middle of five kids. And so like I wasn't exposed to nice things, but I did get to go to a nicer school because my mom taught there and my friends had Bentleys that were coming to class. And so I was like, oh wow, that's nice. I don't know what that's like. So I was exposed to that. And then when I started waiting tables at this nationally recognized restaurant, and the clients are paying tabs that are $2,000-$3,000 every single night.
Like it's nothing.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I quickly learned that wine was what got them from like $1,000 to $1,500 on a tab. And I just started to dial in. If I know more about this, I'll get more down on tables. And like learning the sales mechanics of that. But then I had the epiphany. I was like, I'm making six figures waiting tables, but I'm pretty much capped there. And for me to get on the other side of this table, I'm going to have to jump off or become a manager or owner of a restaurant. And at a certain point, how am I going to get on the other side of that table and be able to pay $1,500 for dinner and not question it and be very confident that it's not emptying my bank account? And that just took me taking a deep dive, going all or nothing on something. And I was fortunate to do it when I did, especially being in this market.
Yeah. Yeah. I think anyone that's listening right now, I know I've gotten this question from myself. There's been many pivots and transitions from people that are doing what they want to do and serving in their purpose. And there's people that are listening or watching right now, if we decide to release the footage, that are saying, wow, I want to leap. And maybe it's easy for Brian or Jansen or somebody else to leap because they feel like they've got nothing to lose, or they just, I don't know. Some people just feel that they're too comfortable right now, or they're scared that they'll lose what they have, or they're scared of going back to the bottom of the mountain. Where do you feel like you got your grit and your drive and your perseverance? And we can even dive into, you know, this breaks up a lot of relationships too. You know, I've shared my story many a times that me diving into my purpose actually broke my relationship, not from my standpoint, but from the viewpoint of my previous partner. She just didn't see what I saw. And you can dive into that as how Olivia, who's your wife, how she always maybe supported you. The friends, your family around you supported you even through the times, because people question that. They're like, I've got to take care of my family. I've got to take care of my family, but it's withholding them from their purpose, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. I quickly learned from a friend of mine, a mentor in my life. I was sitting down with him and he goes, I was probably 4 months into the business and I was probably complaining about an aspect of it. And he was like, man, I tell you what, it's going to be hard, but you have the best kept secret in your back pocket. And that's a supportive wife, somebody who is and Liv has never pushed me away from pursuing what I want. Cause we're firm believers that a lot of what we desire in life, if it's healthy and right, has been placed there by God.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, work your butt off for it and make it happen. But yeah, man, you hear it all the time. Like comfort is the killer of advancement. And like, you gotta be uncomfortable in order to take ground and move forward. And I've got friends and family who are very comfortable where they're at and have no desire really to shake things up. And that's completely fine.
That's fine.
And I completely support them. And you know, I think that I think there's a lot of special ingredients that go together to push somebody to want to continuously push outside of their comfort zone. But man, I've got a mentor who my broker actually, who the guy is set for life. The guy makes plenty of money.
Yeah.
More money than I could probably fathom on a yearly basis. I'm not there yet. But he instilled in me very quickly when I joined his ranks. He goes, look, man, you've got to work every day like tomorrow you're going to lose it. Every single day like tomorrow you're going to lose it. Now, don't live your life in fear, but kind of continuously keep yourself in check going, as soon as I get comfortable, as soon as I no longer am moving forward, I'm slowly stopping. Exactly. And stopping is going to basically kill everything that you're working for. So it's a continual progression. Now, coupling that with the mindset of, I'm not going to work 80 hours a week. I don't work more than 40 hours a week. I just don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's wise.
Agreed.
Because burnout will kill you faster than anything else. So learning the rhythm, learning to work smarter than harder, but at the beginning of it, putting everything into it.
That's good. Now that we've deep dived into your story, man, and I think people are like, man, I'm really comfortable now with this guy, Jansen. And if you're listening and you know Jansen, maybe some things sparked in you that have gotten you a little bit more interested now. I love for us to go into the real estate aspect. Let's dive into a little bit of, I think people are really interested in this industry now. You know, there's, like you said, there's more agents coming out. So maybe we can talk from the agent's perspective, maybe new agents that are coming out that want to really dive into what you're doing. And then from the buyer standpoint, and the investor standpoint, we can maybe go through those three categories there. So if someone is, you know, jumping into real estate and they're wanting to be an agent or feel like, wow, I can really make a living. I can travel. I can live my life. I only had to sell one deal a year, and they want to be on Selling Sunset kind of deal. You know, one deal and just live the life. What are the steps, you know, that you think would make a successful agent early on? Like, what should they be doing? Obviously, maybe some mentorship, but just give us some key steps that maybe you would have learned or wish you would have learned or been told
sooner.
Yeah,
man, it took me about a year and a half to really calibrate my brain and understand what real estate is, what the sales of real estate is. And I'll plug real quick. Am I allowed to plug something?
Oh yeah, of course.
Cool. I've got a course coming out next month. Completely focused on brand new agents, completely focused on you're at the 1% mark of becoming an agent, here's what you got to do. And man, that course, like, I would say number one, surround yourself with the right people. Mm-hmm. Who you join the ranks of, your brokerage, is the most vital component. If you don't do that right, you're going to tread water and not get to where you need to go. Yeah. It'll take you longer. Get exposure. Get surrounded by people who have done it and are doing it. And when you do that, you're going to move so much faster than if you just get an office and work by yourself and try to figure out this industry. That's super important, man. Another few components, man, is the mindsets. The stuff I'll break it down. The course is, it's all about joining the right brokerage, getting the right mindsets, implementing the right structures, inflating the wheels of your car and making sure your car is moving forward. So the four things that you do all the time, every day, to keep your business moving forward. And then five, how to garner the right relationships and build the right relationships. Mm. Those things all culminate for you to have the right mindset and understanding of really what this business is like. And it takes time, but honestly, I wish I would have invested in the right relationships early on, invested in understanding the rooms I was in and not being fearful. Man, it's so easy to be fearful in this business. But the people that get the business are the ones that ask for it. The people that ask for it are the ones that are overcoming fear or fearless. And at the end of the day, that's like the first thing you got to do.
Yeah. Wow, that's good. I think the fear component is something that people refrain from. They're afraid of a no. They're afraid of being called out or exposed or self-sabotage, right? If I get this deal, like, I don't want to mess it up if it's a big client. You know, if I get this deal, I want to make sure, like, I get what they want. And if I, maybe I'll just avoid it or not ask because I'm not ready for that deal yet. You got that course coming out. Is there a timeline? Because I'm going to link some things down below and maybe we could, you know, get people excited about it.
It should be fully launched within the next 30 days. We have it completely built out and written and filmed. It's going to be an online course. And right now we're just putting all the infrastructure up for it to be a very smooth process for people to get it in their hands. But man, I'm really excited. I just boiled down everything I wish I had at my fingertips.
That's good.
From the get-go and understanding it all, because there's a million ways to do real estate, a million. Mm. Everybody's doing it differently, man. And the way I did it worked for me, and I genuinely think the way I did it could work for anybody if they're just willing to implement it and work it.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm excited about that. And I think it will help a lot of people.
I love it. So from the buyer standpoint, I think we're obviously in a recession, as some people think, a depression, headed that way for some people, depending on what news media outlet you're listening to. But it seems like the market, there's been a lot of buying going on. You know, there's people with celebrating their new homes. You're doing well. What have you seen during this climate that has, maybe you try to make your clients more comfortable about that, hey, like, you can buy during this market, or maybe take us through some steps too of, second question pronged, some steps as to, well, how do I like buy a home? Like, for somebody, they're like, I have no idea the process. I don't think I can get approved. I don't think I can do it. I just don't know. And they're afraid to maybe talk to a real estate agent because they just don't know, right?
Yeah. Well, I've, a number of things are popping into my head. First of all, I would say, if you're afraid to talk to an agent because of the position you're in, talk to an agent. You will get insight into the position you're in because they'll be able to see it from a different perspective than the perspective you're in. And if you have an agent that's not willing to sit down and talk to you, if you have a friend who's not willing to sit down and talk to you because they assume you aren't going to be able to buy a house, find a new agent, get a new friend. Because honestly, it's a relationship. And I'd rather sit down with you at 19 years old than you being like, I want to buy my first house. Yeah. And then you pull the trigger at 22, but I stay friends and give you all the insight and understanding you need up front, than to be like, hey, don't waste my time. I'm too busy right now. Come at me when you're...
Yeah.
doesn't make sense for me. And for all the aspiring realtors out there, relationships is the currency of your industry. If you don't have relationships with every single person that you are doing life with, you're not going to succeed. Mm-hmm. So make that the foundation of your business. But man, honestly, and it all comes down to position. It all comes down to what position you're in. Whether you are, were one of my clients that lost their job in March because of COVID,
yeah.
or one of my clients whose income increased because of COVID, you have to position yourself well. Everybody, every single time there's a depression, somebody's taking advantage of it, whether directly or indirectly. And some of the greatest innovators, some of the greatest legacies are built on the back of depression. They're going to happen. They're going to happen. They're cyclical. It's going to yeah. happen. We're going to see probably another one to two depressions in our lifetime,
yep.
Dr. Brian.
Exactly.
And so like understanding that and going, okay, I got to position myself for the next one and get myself ready. Or if I'm in the midst of my life being shaken up by one currently, okay, cool. How do I take advantage of that? I've got a buddy of mine lost his job in March. Kim comes from a completely different industry. And last week we had a conversation about him getting his real estate license. Because the fact of the matter is he's going, okay, cool. I can take advantage of this time at home and position myself well. So that's exactly. one thing. I just want to touch on people who feel like they are SOL because of COVID.
Exactly.
You can always try and take ground, baseline. Yeah. Number two, the reason why so many, it seems like everybody's buying a house during COVID is because this is a different recession than the 08 one was. In 08, the housing market crashed. And so, inventory flooded the market because of foreclosures and people needing to sell their house because of inflated interest rates or the loss of jobs or things of that nature. And when inventory increases, pricing decreases. Mm. And so people are confused right now because of the lack of people are confused right now during this recession because home prices are going up. And the reason
exactly.
home prices are going up is because inventory hasn't increased. And with that comes a continual seller's market, meaning more sellers are leveraging the market better in order to sell their properties as opposed to buyers. Now, here's why it's so great for buyers and so many people are buying. It's because the Fed dropped interest rates. So interest rates are historically low. I have a buyer who got an interest rate of 2.99.
Wow.
2.99. Blows your mind. And for people who don't understand interest rates, it's basically the cost of what you're borrowing the money for. And so if you're borrowing
the money
for 2.99, to put it in context, when I first got in, we were at like 4.75 3 years ago, and people were thinking it was going to climb back up above 5%. To put it even more context, I want to say it was 25 years ago, interest rates were peaking at 20%. So another quick lesson is that's why people think you have to put down 20%, is because unless if the interest rate's at almost 20%, you're going to have to put down 20% as collateral so that you're not upside down in the house. But right now, because of where interest rates are, people can get into a home with as little as 3% down. And there are grants if you're a first-time home buyer to cover that.
I had buyers last year get into
a house. Yeah, man. It's nuts. I've had buyers get into a house last year with $1,800 out of pocket. That's a down payment on a rental house. That's
yes.
your deposit on a rental house. And you're gaining equity and you're gaining appreciation. Guys, it's nuts. It's the
crazy.
Perfect time to buy a house. If you can position yourself to do it,
yep.
do it. I honestly would suggest it.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest question. That was my question. I think a lot of my audience may be wondering is some have houses that are listening and some are like, okay, well, you know, I'm in a house, and we'll go into the buyer's, the seller's standpoint. But from the buyer's standpoint, there's a lot of millennials that are, you know, it's a renter's market where a lot of millennials, you know, actually prefer renting. And they're like, hey, yeah. I don't mind investing, but I don't know if I want to live in a house. So there's this difference, mm-hmm. right? Of you can still buy a home, but maybe use it as a rental property. So I think that maybe reassures some people as to, hey, like I was always scared to go into the process because of all the fees, of all the extra, you know, capital I have to have on hand, which a lot of millennials nowadays really don't have necessarily because of student loans and other things. But you're saying that maybe we'll link some resources down below, or you can just email Jansen as far as you know, some consults or things he might want you, you know, any questions you may have for him. But
yeah,
I think that the loans and the grants and the things, it's like, hey, like I have $1,000. Hey, I have $2,000 that I didn't know that could get me into a place.
Yeah.
You know?
So, and it'll be hard in this market to buy, get down payment assistance and get all of your fees and whatnot rolled into the loan. And I can explain that if you want. So that it's less than $2,000 out of pocket to get into a house. Ideally, you want to have about 10 grand saved up.
Yep.
But yeah, the best resource to understand this is your local real estate agent. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll link my email, or if you know a family friend, reach out to them, get insight to it. But back to the leasing thing, I want to talk about that a little bit. And you were like, millennials ideally like to lease. And and I think that's for a number of reasons. Number one, location.
Yep.
We do not understand commuting. If you drive more than 15 minutes for work and you're not in a sales job going all over the place and different for different appointments, it doesn't make sense. On top of that, the ease of it, calling somebody to come up and fix your AC when the AC is out and they have to do it within 3 days and you know it's going to get done, and not having to come out of pocket for it is definitely awesome.
Yeah.
I would say if you're a single person renting, and you don't mind roommates, become a landlord. It's the most beneficial thing that you could do in that time frame. I wish I had done it. I rented a house out with three other guys at the age of 24. Mm-hmm. I had a couple grand in the bank, and I spent that couple grand on the deposit of the house. Now, what I could have done was spend that couple grand on a down payment on a house, rented out the other three rooms to my three friends, and gained equity for every single month that we lived in that house, as well as had them pay for the mortgage and live rent free. But I wasn't privy to that, so I didn't do it. I wasn't in the industry yet. So there's definitely, again, back to the position thing, there's definitely a way to position yourself well, regardless of where you're at. I would just reach out to an agent and say, hey, show me my blind spots. What's the best position to be in right now for where I'm at? And it might be a little out of my comfort zone to learn how to rent early on, but I'd rather learn how to rent and fail 23 and have to put everything into learning how to rent at 33.
Exactly.
And when I say rent, I mean be a landlord.
Yeah.
Learn how to manage your rental property. Because you got time, and you got time to learn the process and mess up at the process, but overall you'll come out ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. From an entrepreneur standpoint too, since we're on the topic of buying, there are a lot of entrepreneurs that are listening, or a lot of people that are entrepreneurial. And they're looking like, they're just not even looking at the rules or regulations or diving into asking a real estate agent of like, you know, I've got to be in business for 3+ years. I've got to have this a certain amount of income on a consistent basis. Yeah. Like all these different things, to where some entrepreneurs have cash flow, they have capital, they have money, but the rules and regulations are a little bit different. Have you dealt with entrepreneurs that have been buying?
That's me. I'm in full disclosure, my wife and I rent,
which is
ironic. But if you're a 1099 employee and you are not W-2, meaning you are self-employed, you're going to have bank statements and 1099s tax returns for 2 years in order to get pre-approved by a lender.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of it. And then on top of that, another thing, going back to like the reason people desire to rent, is location and ability and the ease of it. And another thing is my wife and I cannot afford what we want to own, what we want to live in.
That's good.
We just can't. Not yet. We live in a high rise downtown. To own in a high rise downtown, you're spending $500,000 to $1 million.
Exactly.
Your boy doesn't have it yet. So what I'm doing is renting while we're young. And we while we're renting, when we don't have kids to live downtown, it's an opportunity we won't get back. So that's why we're doing that. But at the same time, we'll probably buy in the next 3 months. And the reason why was we're finally at the place where it's like, okay, we have a 1-bedroom apartment downtown and the views are amazing, but what would 4 bedrooms look like with a pool? And what would having a media room, and what would having more space in a garage, and all of these things look like for us now that we're in the midst of potentially trying to have a family.
Exactly.
And starting one. So Yeah, position is an important thing. And millennials are starting to buy and move out to the suburbs. We're seeing the data on it every single month. So people are moving in that direction. And it's only a matter of time. There's a reason why. It's just part of the journey of life. But if I were talking to an entrepreneur, man, I would first of all get educated on the facts of it. Yeah. And you don't know the facts until they're shown to you. So if you haven't talked to somebody who knows the facts, you don't know the facts. If you haven't done the research yet, you don't know the facts. So take the time to do that. The easiest way to do it is have somebody tell you them instead of doing the research all on your own. So getting privy to that, reaching out to somebody, getting those facts, getting somebody there. At realtors, I pride myself on being as broad as possible, doing as many different types of deals as possible. Land, lake, rural, downtown, condos, anything and everything, buy, lease, sell, investor, commercial, everything. Mm-hmm. But most realtors try to do a niche. So my niche might be millennial buyers because a majority of my clients are millennial, young, first-time home buyers. And I've really become privy to all of that. But I've worked with investors and I can educate myself on that. That's my full-time job. And so reaching out to somebody, I trust somebody with my finances. I have a financial planner. Yep. I have a CPA. I'm not going to dive into tax law. I'm going to hire somebody to do that for me. You know what I mean? So when it comes to investing and getting privy to real estate, I have an investor who's in his first 2 years of investing. We've done 3 properties together and he's utilizing me from my information and the resources I have. And he's paying me money. At a certain point, he probably won't need me. And I understand that.
Yeah,
but it's a relationship type thing. So man, reach out and leverage the relationships you have to anybody listening. That's what I would advise more than anything. Leverage the relationships you have. It's the currency to your life.
Yeah, that's good. And I said we were going to go in 3 buckets. So we've got the investor's kind of standpoint. We've gotten the buyer standpoint. And then we've got a seller standpoint. You know, there are people that are in homes right now that are looking to sell, but they're scared. They're scared they're not going to get what they want. They're scared of other things. I know personally, I've had family members, you know, I don't want to disclose too much information, but family members that have, you know, refinanced and gotten themselves in a situation to where it's not the best because that fear of leveling up, you know? So, you know, neighborhoods depreciate over time, land value, all those different things. And I'm just talking from a broad standpoint of what I know.
Yeah. But
those little things and details, can you expound upon that if a seller, what you've seen is trying to sell or they're scared or like what should they do if they're trying to level up to say, hey, I want to make sure I'm always in the right position to have equity in my home, right?
Yeah. There's a lot to this. And I'll try to unpack it and not forget anything. But when it comes to selling your home, ideally, what you want to do is capitalize on the market. So right now we're in a seller's market. I put a house under contract yesterday and got the seller $10,000 over asking. Wow. That's because there's a lot of buyers trying to buy every single house. And we're seeing this year over year over year here in the DFW market because of how many buyers are coming to our market from other markets and inventory can't keep up. Yes. You see new neighborhoods popping up every single week
everywhere
in DFW.
It's crazy here.
And they're not able to keep up. Yeah, it's nuts. They're not able to keep up. If you're in a market where that isn't happening, you'd have to probably look at it from a different perspective or a different vantage point to make it work for you. But in my market where it's a seller's market, I would advise if you're in the position to capitalize and you have the equity in the property, take advantage of the market. So say you have 40 grand in equity in your property because you've been in it for 5 years and you want to cash in on that and you're in a $200,000 house, $300,000 is going to appreciate faster than $200,000. Probably by 50% if my math is right.
Yeah.
So taking that 40 grand that you now have and putting 15% into a $300,000 house is going to lend you more money year over year. At the end of the day, when it comes to buying a house, if you're in a house currently that you could sell and get some money and put it into something else, What I would advise to you is buying something that you think you would want 5 years from now. Don't look for the next market that's going to blow up. Don't look for Frisco 5 years ago. For those who don't know, Frisco is a DFW city that is the fastest growing city year over year in the U.S. I had a friend who bought in there and lived in it for 1 year and gained 75 grand in appreciation because the market grew.
That's crazy.
You're not going to find it. If you knew how to deduce that and an algorithm to know what the next market was, there would be a lot of rich real estate agents.
Yes.
We don't know how to do it. It's mm-hmm. not really possible. So I would advise finding a house that you would want 5 years from now, because it's heavily treed, because there's a pool already in it, because it has a split bedrooms, because it has an open kitchen, because all of those things. Mm-hmm. And then what I would also advise is if you're looking to move and buy a different house because of the investment opportunity of it, but you're going to live in it, buy a house that you can put money into and get money out. For instance, a house where you can convert the garage and turn that garage into another 500 square feet of living is going to add so much money for little money in. You can convert that for 15 grand and get 60 grand out of it.
Yeah.
Finding a house that hasn't been updated yet and you have 15 grand that you're going to put into it, which is going to bring the property value up another 40 to 50 grand, doing that. There's always ways, it just goes back to positioning. Positioning yourself well and getting the most opportunity out of the opportunity you're given. Mm-hmm. So, first I would advise if you're in a market where you have money to cash in and you want to take advantage of it, sell right now. Put your house on the market, cash in on that property, and put that money into something that's going to appreciate faster. If you've been in a house for 3 to 4 years and you've got 20, 30, 40 grand in equity in it, cash in on it and put that 30, 40 grand in equity into a house that will appreciate faster. Our market, and for your listeners, if they're like, well, what's an appreciating market? If a normal Metroplex will appreciate at a rate of 2 to 3% annually. For context, DFW has been appreciating from 5 to 9% in various pockets year over year for the past 4 to 5 years. It's an insane market. So getting into an area like that you know is going to appreciate, that you see growth, companies and corporations are moving into it, and people are moving there because it's a desirable area, that's probably the main factor. And just being close, good schools, things like that, being close to the metropolitan areas and places that have commerce and shopping and stuff like that. That's another thing that you'd want to look for.
Exactly.
Reach out to your real estate agent.
Love it. I love it, man. And I think the biggest thing I got out of that is really, this goes into a whole nother financial piece, and we're not going to dive into that on here, but I think people are always feeling like they missed the mark, or they're missing the ball because they don't have the capital, or, you know, and that comes down to habits and behavior. If you want something, guys, I think that you have to feel like you have some type of plan. You know, I love going in flow of life, but the plan of saving, the plan of having some sense of responsibility behind your goals is key, because, you know, you see so many people capitalizing and people are like, man, I shouldn't have bought XYZ. I shouldn't have wasted my money. I should have done XYZ with my money instead. Woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, but at the same time, there's always going to be, like Jansen said, appreciation. There's always going to be new markets. There's always going to be new things coming and opportunities that you can find and see, but you've got to be ready. Like, we all have to be ready when that opportunity comes, and you can start now. So, Jansen, as always, I leave my guests with an open opportunity at the end, to kind of just share their area of expertise, anything we didn't talk about, what you think our listeners might want to know, just your wisdom. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be over personal, it could be over real estate, it could be over anything that you've learned. And then another question is, how are you evolving? Like, what's on the horizon? And maybe you've already kind of, you know, gave some insight into that, of what's coming in your new entrepreneurial endeavors, but just kind of give us those two things, some wisdom and then maybe how you're evolving during this season and maybe what's to come and what's your vision for yourself.
Yeah, man. I would probably say the best way to get a better life than the one that you currently have is invest in yourself and invest in your relationships. I've probably said it 5 times on the podcast. Invest in relationships. it like invest in people and you'll always get a return. It's the most beautiful part of life is building roots with people that you love, respect, can learn from. Surround yourself with mentors. I've got four in my life. I'm very clear with them that they are mentors to me. I give honor to them regularly because they've changed my life just being exposed to what they know. I can download 40 years of wisdom from one person instead of trying to learn it over the course of my own 40 years. Yeah. And invest in yourself. At the end of the day, man, having a car repossessed 2 years ago and being able to put 10, 15 grand into an entrepreneurial venture now is because I invested in myself and, and put the time and money into knowing and learning something, not waiting for it to be given to me. So I would do that. I would start there. Another thing, what's coming up, man, this course is coming up. If you've ever thought about getting your real estate license and you want to download from somebody who's done it, I made 15 grand my first year, got my car repossessed to selling 10 million over the course of 12 months. Yeah. I show you exactly how I did it. And it can be replicated. It's not because I'm lucky. It's just because I invested in myself and my own knowledge. And then, yeah, man, I got that coming up. If you ever have questions, ever need real estate advice, I am a firm believer that no conversation is wasted if you are generous with your time and generous with your knowledge. So if you ever have questions, hit me up. You can follow me on Instagram at Jansen Klefker and shoot me a DM, man. I respond to all of them.
Love it, man. I appreciate you. Yeah, I appreciate you so much. And this has been an amazing episode, as I expected. Hopefully it's been beneficial to anyone that's listening or watching during this season, that you've gained more insight, inspiration, and just some sense of hope that it's possible that you can really do what you want to do and putting your word, your actions behind your word. So Jansen, I appreciate you again. And anyone that's listening, go check out Jansen. All of his stuff, all of his info will be down in the show notes, his email, his contact information, his Instagram, as he said, everything will be down there. If you have any questions further for him, shoot him a DM, shoot him an email. That being said, I appreciate each and every one of you that hops on and listens. If you're first time or returning, let us know how we did. You know, let us know via a rating and review. Give us some insight and share it out to anyone that you think might benefit that needs to hear some real estate advice or just inspiration as well. Until next time, we'll see you guys on the next episode.